Welcome to episode 238 of Friars on the Farm. I'm Donovan, and with me is Roy.
Oh, the season is in full swing. All the affiliates are up and running.
We haven't had a full, AAA's had a full week of games, but certainly the AAA and High A have had a handful of games, which we'll go over. But yeah, dude, it's the season's back. We're back. Guess who's back? Friars on the Farm is back. That's right.
Dude, that's so bad. Well, so this week we've got our little our Major League Minute, some MILB news, and a new affiliate rundown format. We're going to try out something different this year. You know, we've stuck to the same format the last, what, 3, 4, 5 years? It's crazy to think how long we've been doing this. So you came up with a new idea. I'm excited to try it out.
Yeah, we'll go into it a little bit later on. And I wanted to do something different, just kind of change it up. You guys reach out to us, find us on Twitter, obviously, and say if you like it, if you don't like it, you want to go back to the old format. I kind of like this. It focuses on hitting, on pitching, and kind of like a grab bag of stuff that happens to every affiliate every week. Sometimes it will be interviews. Sometimes those will be, some kind of quirky stuff. Like this week's a lot of quirky stuff because it's the beginning of the season and some opening day records. But really, really cool, different format, and I think you guys will like it. But first, you guys, go to the Apple Podcast, give us a rating, give us a review. You can also follow us on Spotify, iHeartRadio. We're on X, we're on Threads. Obviously, we're here on the YouTube channel. Go to the YouTube channel, hit subscribe. We really appreciate it, and we'll go from there. Once again, with the new season, I'll have more interviews from Lake Elsinore. I've got all the gear. I was looking for another word for gear, but to do interviews, which will be really cool. And instead of just hearing the audio, you'll be able to see us, see me interview people.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that works out too. When do you think you're going to be able to get up to Lake Elsinore? Anything planned coming up the next couple of weeks?
This weekend I'm busy. I'm going to look for the next homestand. I think their next homestand starts Tuesday. They're out of town this week. Was today Thursday, Friday? Yeah, so they'll play through this week. Perhaps next weekend I'll get up there. I also want to give those guys some time to get some at bats, some innings, the feet underneath them. That way we can do a little bit of talking. I haven't really set a schedule with watching games yet. I watched Adam Mazur's opening, his first start. I'm watching his second start right now. Work and just life is kind of early on in the season's kind of got me kind of screwy, but I'll find the rhythm and I'll be posting a lot more videos of the games I'm watching and be able to give some input for those games as well.
Yeah, I was hoping to make it up there for opening day. It didn't work out. I have yet to make it out there, but yeah, same thing. Next time they have a homestand, I'm going to be itching to get up there. I don't know that I'm going to be able to make their Hall of Fame induction, but I was really excited to hear about that. We'll get to that later. But first, we got a little bit of news here. Leo Dallas DeVries breaks the MLB Top 100 prospect list. I was a little surprised by this. Usually, MLB Pipeline is a little more conservative on putting the new guys on their top list without having any pro ball experience. So and we saw him in spring training. He got plenty of play with the big league club coming in as a late game sub. And he looked like he belonged. Fluid motions at shortstop, taking some disciplined at bats. And they thought enough of him to put him in the top 100. They didn't even do that for Ethan Salas last year.
No, they didn't. And I tell you, I put this down. He's at number 98 right now, but that was like last week. I saw the tweet come from MLB Pipeline that said he broke at 100. And then I think I checked it actually that day or maybe the next day, and he was at 98. So that was a couple of weeks ago. They have guys in the complex, watching these players, evaluating them. So it's not just blind, like, oh, we saw them in spring training. Like, they have eyes on these players. So there are some, it's not kind of armchair scouting for, it's MLB Pipeline. So, there's lots like there. And I think he's the best, dude. I kind of lost it there for a second. Sorry.
We'll see. He's got a long way to go before we start calling him the best. But, the Padres picking up Salas last year and DeVries this year as the two top international prospects far and away, bodes well for the Padres' future. So a little bit of Major League news here. Graham Pauly started off, didn't get a whole lot of play. He got his first home run, got his first hit, first, you know, all of that stuff. But they optioned him down to El Paso, and they brought Brett Sullivan up. I thought this made a lot of sense. Brett Sullivan's been killing it in El Paso, gives him a little bit more positional flexibility. And if he's coming up just to ride the pine and get the occasional plate appearance every 2-3 games, I would rather that be Brett Sullivan and let Graham Pauly go back down to El Paso where he can play every day, get every day work on mechanics in the field, you know, tracking pitches every single day. That's where he needs to be right now.
Absolutely. And you want him to get those regular at-bats. And Sully, dude, I have it later on the agenda. It's a choo-choo. It's a Sully Express. He had 2 5-for-5 games in the first week. He was tearing it up, which is great to see where he, you know, sometimes when you get demoted, particularly someone that's been up for a while, like Sully was last year, you know, you can get kind of disheartened and you can kind of get down and just kind of sulk. And he didn't. He just came out tearing it up. And he's been rewarded. And now we're going to see Pauly not in double A, but in triple A. Now, we'll see what he does in triple A with that advanced, the consistent advanced pitching, but also it's a Pacific Coast League where he could absolutely tear it up. And then you don't know, you know, we'll have to be evaluated with how those at-bats go from the evaluators in El Paso. But yeah, I'm stoked to have him. It finally gives me a reason to watch triple A. Like El Paso's little bit of a struggle this year with some recognition of names and players. You got Tristan Ornelas. You had Brett Sullivan. But now you have Graham Pauly, and certainly that's going to give me reason to watch those later games at El Paso.
Now, Brett Sullivan last year, he only batted .210 with a .244 on base. Didn't hit for much power, but he is a good hitter. He's been a good hitter at every level that he's been. I think he just didn't get enough opportunity last year to really get comfortable, you know, and get – past that kind of break the seal. So I think we're going to see a little bit more out of him this year, left-handed bat. He can play some catcher. I think that also opens up, you know, maybe bringing in Camposano as a pinch hitter late in the game, without worrying about burning your, you know, what do you do if your backup catcher gets injured, then you bring in the emergency catcher. You're putting, I don't know, Jackson Merrill behind the plate. That won't be the case with Brett Sullivan on the roster.
Go ahead.
So Jeff Sanders, the Union Tribune, has this article here. The first demotion of Graham Pauly's career is a demotion in name only. By optioning the 23-year-old rookie to AAA El Paso on Tuesday, the Padres are reaffirming their belief that their reigning minor league player of the year has a path toward a more significant role in the organization than simply serving as a utility player as Pauly had through the first 2+ weeks of the season. In that regard, it's easy to see the forest through the trees, even if it's not your first choice. Quote, of course I want to play. I want to be a Major League Baseball player, Pauly said, as he packed his bag to join the Chihuahuas in Sacramento, future home of the Athletics. What? I think I'll be in a good spot once I come back. But right now, I agree the best thing to do is go get ABs and be ready to go. Pauly's less than 2 years removed from the Padres selecting him in the 13th round out of Duke and has just one full year of pro ball on his resume, including just 20 games at Double A San Antonio at the end of last year's 23-homer campaign. You know, he did so well all spring. Yeah. It's easy to forget just how little experience he has at the upper levels of the minors.
Yeah, I mean, just a whirlwind season. I mean, I interviewed him in the beginning of the season in Elsinore, A-ball, dude, and he made it up to Double A and dominated throughout the whole system. And we talked about this before, like bringing him up, just get his feet wet, kind of get familiar with the major league rhythm and the kind of how things go. So when he does come up, and he hopefully will come up to stay, that, you know, won't be such a bright eye, oh my God, what am I doing here? There was a little bit of overmatchedness, I think, in some of his at-bats. Obviously, that at-bat against the Giants and Taylor, one of the twins. What was it, Taylor? The Taylor that just – he swung at a ball that almost hit him in the face that kind of went viral for everyone. But still, you know, just going to go down to Triple A, get his regular at-bats, and go from there, really.
You know, I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, Pitching Ninja and the era that we live in, that video blew up. But I mean, it's not hard to see how that happens. He's got that crazy riding slider, but then he also has that sinker that tails away. And so if you're sitting on that pitch that's going to start middle and then dive toward the far part of the zone, and you're pulling the trigger, and next thing you know, it's coming right at you. what are you going to do? At least he got a piece of it. He almost fouled the thing off.
Yeah, absolutely. So continuing with the article, I think I learned a ton, Pauly said. I think the guys have welcomed me with open arms and brought a lot to the table in terms of helping me develop both defensively and offensively. Defensively, Machado and Jake Cronenworth, those guys are some of the best at their positions, and those are positions I'm playing. So it definitely helps having those guys leading the way. Offensively, just coming off the bench, starting, having different roles, I think all that is beneficial in the long run. The goal is to go down there and play really well, Pauly said. I just want to get as many at-bats as possible, see a lot of pitching, put together consistent ABs, and hit the ball hard to see all parts of the field. I think if I do that, get as many at-bats as I can, I'll be in a good spot to come up here and help.
I'm trying to pull up his game log this year. I'm curious if he started. So he's played one game in El Paso so far, and that was at third base. I'm going to be really curious to see if they move him around. And he was playing almost exclusively third base in spring, a little bit of first base. I don't think we saw him in left field at all in spring training, although he played there a little bit last year. I was kind of expecting to see him get a little bit of a look in left field. And that's, I mean, especially once Machado's back, that's the place where you can see somebody kind of sliding in and taking some playing time.
Well, if he does well in AAA, and depending on where the team is, you know, there might be a trade in the future where it does give them more playing time. But right now, that infield is stacked with very little playing time. You know, I was going to say before we went into this article was Brett Sullivan was playing first base too. And I think he might have even played a little bit of first base in spring training. So with him on the bench there, he can give Cronenworth a day off and, you know, and play first base. So where Paulie will play when he does come up, we don't know. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be if someone gets injured, and he is playing well in El Paso, but we'll see how it goes. Just let's put him down there, let him continue to develop.
You know, so Brett Sullivan, we think of him as a catcher. We know he's played a little bit of first base. I looked it up. He was the starting shortstop when he was in college. And so, you know, if he starts a game, the Padres do have a chance of putting 9 shortstops or at least 8 shortstops on the field. I mean, if Joe Musgrove is – I bet Joe Musgrove played shortstop at some point in high school going back. The guy's an athlete.
Well, you know, talk about Sully. He's also – you know, everyone talks about Joe Profar being kind of like a vibe guy and kind of a gel guy. Sully's the same way. The great attitude, great clubhouse guy. Great teammate. And that's the thing with him. I remember we talked to Tom Cosgrove. He kind of bailed out. He's like, yeah, I'm meeting. Who is he meeting? He was meeting Sully. God, was it Bogarts? I think he was meeting someone else for dinner. Like,
Sully's
He's in the middle of all those, you know, all the little going ons with the team. So I think he's another one of those guys that are going to help gel the team as the season goes.
Right. And having somebody that's content with that bench role,
right?
But then ready to come up and perform when the time comes. You know, that's big. Rather than having egos on the bench and, you know, the infighting that happens when people aren't happy with their playing time. I think right now, I mean, they're running out the same lineup every single day. You know, maybe flip flop and Rosario and Wade Kim and third Bogarts. Base a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, so I mean, at some point they're gonna have to start giving guys rest. I feel like once Machado's back playing in the field, they'll start rotating the DH around to give guys a day off the feet. But still, right now it's pretty set. So yeah, it's a bench role. It's purely a bench role, and so it's better for Pauly to be down picking up ABs in El Paso.
Yeah.
All right. So next little piece of news here, and I was so happy to see this. The Padres, Jackson Wolfe is back with the Padres. Yes. So they made a trade with the Pirates. They traded infielder Kervin Pichardo to the Pirates. Pichardo had a pretty good year last year with Fort Wayne, and he was picked by Mad Friars as one of their breakout candidates this year. Somebody who's not in their top 30, but could be by the end of the year. So kind of trading a spare piece, if you will, because the Padres really have a lot of depth in the infielder position category. And then bringing Jackson Wolfe back, he has two minor league option years remaining. So I think he'll make at least a couple of starts for the Padres this year at some point, but he's going to be an up and down guy. And the Padres, they need that pitching depth.
Yeah, and there's a couple of guys we talked about. I talked a little bit about it in the affiliate rundown. A couple of guys in AAA that are going to be those guys that are going to be counted on. Adrian Morejon, Estrada. Some of the guys have done really well early on. Add Jackson Wolf to that, and maybe he comes up for a spot start. Maybe he comes up and fills a bullpen role. Just that depth that we didn't have last year seems to be happening this year. You know, and some of that depth is also still in Double A as well. As I watch Adam Mazur finish up here in with the Missions and just dealing. There's lots of starting pitching coming in, a lot of bullpen guys where we didn't really have that, you know, last year. And this year, the bullpen still hasn't kind of found where it is yet. I know it's early. People hate saying that now this year with it happening last year. But you know, as that
bullpen. I'm not saying that at all. Right. You're not going to hear that from me. I learned my lesson.
Right. The bullpen finding itself, it will find itself. And, you know, maybe one of those guys gets sent down with someone that's performing well in the Pacific Coast League. So we'll see how that develops. But it's good to have that strong, you know, a good, at least on paper, good, strong depth in the system.
Right. Well, you said it there on paper. A year ago, I remember talking and we were feeling good about the depth, at least in spring training. And there was a lot of underperformance and struggles and a couple injuries. And next thing you know, all that depth kind of vanished. So right now, having a few guys that are candidates for that number five role, like Matt Waldron is doing a good job so far. Yeah. I don't know if at some point the league might kind of figure him out and he won't be as effective as he is right now. So then that's when maybe you put Pedro Avila up there on the mound, or maybe by then Jay Groom is starting to look good. And he was another guy we were looking on last spring. He was killing it. Yeah. And we thought he might make the opening day rotation, and then that just evaporated.
Yeah.
So, you know, but he's coming off injury. He's had a couple of pretty good appearances this year. So we need that depth, and I don't want to see it evaporate.
Absolutely. Well, talking about the depth, let's move on to MLB Pipelines, each organization's most stacked minor league affiliate. And you guessed it. It's the Padres AA. It's the Missions. They are just absolutely stacked. I mean, last year, remember, there was so much talk about the system, but they're real young. They're in A ball. They're in high A. None of those guys, you know, they came up a little bit later on in the season, but now all those guys have come up and are just jam-packed in Double A, and it is a fun team to watch. I'm watching it here. I watched it the other day, and just every guy that comes up, like, hell yeah, Marcus Castagnon, Jacob Marcy, just tons of guys to watch. So that's what it says here. Robbie Snelling, Adam Mazur, Jacob Marcy give San Diego's Texas League affiliate obvious headliners, and notably nine of the organization's top 18 prospects, with each two stops away from majors. Snelling, Mazur, Ryan Burgert, Austin Krobe, Victor Lizarraga give the Missions an interesting rotation, while Marcy, Nathan Martorella, Brandon Valenzuela, and Marcos Castagnon give the San Antonio lineup ample length. And right now, Martorella is off to like a 400 start, just tearing it up.
And the tank commander.
The tank commander. So the Padres aren't afraid of calling up prospects straight from Double A, and we know that. A particularly pitcher, so they can avoid the Triple A El Paso launching pad. So keep in mind all season long. Yeah,
it's going to be fun to watch those guys. And the pitching, obviously, those are the guys that – so we're looking at AAA depth we were just talking about. But by midseason, if a couple of these guys are looking ready, they're going to get the call. Yeah. And you saw that last year from that team up the road in blue. They had a whole bunch of injuries, and they kept calling – they've got this endless stream of guys out there in Tulsa that are up there throwing 98 with a slider that does this. And hopefully that this year, that will be the Padres, that as they have needs, you've got guys like Snelling, Mazur, Krobe, Burgert that are ready to come up and contribute. I'd love to see Victor Lizarraga take that next step forward too.
Absolutely love to see him take the next step forward.
Now he's the youngest of that bunch. If he takes another year or two to make it, then so be it. But he's got the electric kind of stuff. I'd love to see him make that next step.
Absolutely. So let's move on.
Okay, so next article here. Salas and Lesko form a formidable duo on and off the field. Padres prospects at home as tin caps, roommates, and battery mates by Ben Weinrip. When Ethan Salas and Dylan Lesko learned that they were going to begin the 24 season together at High A, they quickly decided to room together. I wonder how that works. If they if they draw straws, or if they can put their name in a hat or something to figure out who gets roomed up. So, quote, it's good to have a relationship like that, because if you trust your catcher, you know they have your best intentions, the 20-year-old right-hander said. And pitch calling wise too, you know what he's going to put down, and he knows what I want. We're on the same page, and it's big. Sunday with Salas behind the plate, Lesko tossed four hitless innings. And right there, that reminds me of my trip to Fort Wayne back in 2018, I think it was, when it was Joey Cantillo and Ryan Weathers, and they were roomed up with Blake Hunt.
Yeah.
And so they had this whole camaraderie together. They were besties. And so on and off the field and being able to pick each other's brains, that's got to help so much.
Yeah.
So Lesko and Salas, who singled, walked, stole a base, scored a run, and threw out a would-be base sealer. that's a pretty good day right there. Nice they made day. Three starts together last year at Single A Lake Elsinore. In that run, they combined to strike out 11 while allowing 7 runs in 8 innings, but the key has been building a deeper relationship off the field as well. The duo go to eat together and play video games. Lesko wants to take the 17-year-old phenom golfing soon. Between innings, they chat about any mistakes and how to prepare for the next frame. Does Ethan Salas play golf at all?
No, but Lesko does.
Yeah, well, Lesko's a pitcher. He can play golf all he wants. Right. Salas has that sweet swing. I'm a golfer.
I don't want to
see the golf swing mess up his baseball swing. Maybe he learns how to play golf opposite handed from his baseball swing.
You know, all I can see is, you know, just let me tell you about my best friend. Wah, 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 wah. Like, I can just see the tin caps. We got to talk to John Nolan about this. Dude, just
holding hands, little, skipping down the sidewalk. Right,
you know, just, you know, catching, you know, maybe a couple of plays. Just like, let me tell you about my best friend. All right. So there was evidence on how their bond manifests itself in games in the first inning. Down the count. 2-0 with the runner on first, Salas called for a slider, a secondary pitch Lesko has been working on over the offseason to play off his fastball. The 2022 first-round draft pick dropped the pitch in the bottom of the zone and coasted an inning-ending double play. It's shocking, man, Eshelman said. It doesn't scream 17-year-old. Just his ability to take in information and be able to translate it into the game is truly wise beyond his years. His ability to understand that kind of stuff and his ability to pitch to a scouting report and understand each guy is something that he's done a tremendous job with us. Obviously, our organization has done a lot of work with him, and his ability to use it in games and perform is really well done.
Well, and another thing that tells me, okay, so this is a breaking ball that Lesko's been working on over the offseason. So that tells me he doesn't have it dialed in. This is his second year removed from Tommy John. So the command is still returning. And so this is a critical moment. You got a runner on first. You know the runner is going to want to take off, and you're calling for a breaking ball. He knows that if that ball's in the dirt, he's going to stay in front of it. So he has the confidence. He has confidence in Lesko to deliver a good pitch, but he also has the confidence in himself that if this thing's in the dirt, he's still going to be able to corral it and take care of business.
Yeah, apparently in the offseason, Lesko spent time in Texas with major leaguers not rehabbing, but just kind of building up strength and working with a bunch of, I'm not sure, I don't have any names there, but I read an article where that's where he was, and I heard it also on some of the broadcasts. So,
you know, that seems to be a thing more recently for prospects to be able to work, you know, in the same gyms and with the same trainers as established big leaguers. I'm sure in the past there was some of that, you know, hey, I don't want this kid taking my job, so he needs to stay out of my gym kind of thing.
Right. Or even, you know, it could be the same agent. Like, hey, this agent has these 5 guys. This is where I go. Who did we talk to? Was it Crow that said he goes down to Texas as well? One of the pitchers we talked to this last offseason, you know, he goes down there, and that's where he always goes. And there's guys that he used to play with and other major leaguers that go there as well. And that's kind of the great thing about the offseason. And as you do, you get, he might not even been with the same organization. I'm pretty sure they're not, but you're around a major league pitcher in the offseason and you're coming up. And now you're right. Now things have changed where it's not like, hey, you're going to take my job. I'm going to do my work and you're going to do your work. It's now it's like, hey, we want you to get better. We want everyone to get better. And you learn from that.
You sure do. All right, so finishing up the article here, Lesko was pleased with his scoreless start, even if he has more things to iron out. The righty got eight whiffs on 20 swings, so more strikeouts are expected to be on the way, especially considering he racked up 52 Ks in 33 innings between the three levels in 2023.
Yeah.
Quote, I'm feeling good, especially after this offseason, just having a full, healthy one and getting to face some good hitters, Lesko said. Just work out, get back to my daily routine. The confidence is going up. How I'm feeling is going up. Everything is just getting better.
And we really do. We haven't talked about it too much, but we expect him to take a big step forward. We're hoping to see a big step forward.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, the command is the last thing to come back from Tommy John. And so last year, the stuff was good, but he didn't necessarily know where it was going. So once he can refine that, and the sky's the limit for the guy.
Yeah, and if they can get a game in, this is the second night, it was today, Thursday.
My gosh, yeah, they've bagged two games already because of the rain. Poor John Nolan, all he wants to do is call games out there, and instead, oh, man.
So, hey, we're going to come right back with the affiliate rundown. Okay, well, here's the new affiliate rundown, and this is how it's going to go. For the season, we're changing the format. So it's going to be Painting the Corners. We'll be discussing pitching performances of the week. On the Screws, we'll talk about hitting performances. And Batting Around, we'll have an assortment of topics, weird plays, interviews, kind of quirky stuff that we get throughout the week for each affiliate. But, yeah, I those are the ones that I came up with.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I mean, before we were reading a lot of chunks out of the Mad Friars reports and just kind of game recap stuff. And it became a little bit heavy and a little stat heavy. I like mixing the articles and the interviews and the analysis in there a little bit. Yeah. I feel like that's that when we're putting together our agenda, that's where I'm a little bit better at finding stuff on Fangraphs, Baseball America, wherever else. It's good to mix it up.
Yeah.
Should I fire it off? Okay, so Painting the Corners, Lake Elsinore. On Friday, Will Varmet earned his first professional win. The undrafted free agent pitched two innings and walked three, had four strikeouts. First batter Miguel Mendez faced in his 2024 season made it memorable. Kendall George struck a hard ground ball directly into the Lake Elsinore starting pitcher's ankle. Ouch! After a brief discussion with the training staff, Mendez resumed his night to less than optimal results. Mendez would allow two walks, but just one run. However, for how tight the spot appeared to be, one run was an incredible testament to his mental fortitude. Mendez would also strike out two of three batters and refuse to allow a run in the second inning, ending his night with one earned run, four walks, three strikeouts, and the only hit being one that likely left a colorful bruise on his ankle. And that's one of those where it's like, if you get your ankle out of the way, let your middle infielders pick you up.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Right. So then on Saturday, Kobe Robinson, two innings pitched, four strikeouts, no earned runs, and Bradley Rodriguez, one and a third inning pitched, two strikeouts, no earned runs, each had solid outings. Those are two guys. Yeah. I'm surprised Kobe's back with the Storm. Yeah. But he's a power fastball reliever. And Bradley Rodriguez, he's breaking on the scene this year, but the guy can touch 100. So there's a couple of guys that, you know, relievers in particular can move real fast through an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bradley is the guy that you really want to keep an eye on. I think he will move fast if he does well. And also, I could see him making it up to high A, obviously, maybe even touching double A later on in the season. But this is his first season stateside. Before we do move on, I do want to say I do take some of the we do still get some of our content from Mad Friars. We also get a lot of content from the affiliate rundowns that I get from each affiliate via email. So we're not shying away from pimping the Mad Friars, and definitely you guys go spend the $5 to get your Mad Friars subscription. But I'm just trying to mix it up a little bit. So with that being said, on the Screws. Friday, opening day, two players to watch this season each had three hits and scored twice, Romeo Santabria and Rossman Verdugo. Rossman Verdugo stole home and had a double. Saturday, Rossman Verdugo hit his first home run, still just 19 years old. He was second in the league in doubles last year. Jaber Shears and Braden Carpathio, went back-to-back as well. Head would go 2-for-5 and make a highlight reel catch in the bottom of the ninth there.
You know, it's going to be interesting having Romeo Santabria and Jose Santabria on the same team. I wonder how long they're going to be both with the Storm. But same last name, absolutely no relation. And they couldn't come from different backgrounds. So Jose Santabria is from Venezuela, spent quite a bit of time in the Dominican League, just accustoming to baseball and the culture and all of that stuff. Romeo Santabria is from Miami. He's a JUCO bandit. Like brothers from different mothers, I guess, brothers from different continents. So I like that stuff,
you know, and it's Santabria is such a unique last name that you're like, wow, that is kind of weird. It's not like Jones. It's like there's two Donovans anywhere.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they had Sammy Zavala and Juan Zabala.
Zabala, right, right. Well, we still have the Zabala. And Sammy is doing quite well in the Winston-Salem Dash. Affiliate.
Oh, there's a lot of former friends that are off to really good starts this year. And it's hard to see. You see those guys like, man, James Wood, you should be crushing it for the Padres. But anyway.
Ooh. Yeah, he is on fire, and he's in Rochester, and I've been to Rochester and watched a Red Wings game there. It's not easy to hit a home run there. It's really cold now, but that boy is just – he hit a home run, I think, yesterday. He's making it look easy, and he will be a National this year, I guarantee it, probably sooner rather than later.
Right. All right, so we've spent a lot of time talking about Graham Pauly. Jay Beshears is kind of cut from the same cloth. He's also a Duke draftee. He's kind of a man without a position. He played second base with Duke, but the guy's 6'4" and can play all over the place, but it's the definitely a bat over a glove kind of a profile. He's going to be an interesting guy to watch. He might have the kind of year that Pauly, well, I mean, rare few have the kind of year that Pauly had last year. Right. But I mean, as far as a breakout season, hitting really well, playing a little bit all over the place, maybe moving up a level or two this year.
You know, and they do have the DH. So, I mean, these big guys, that if they can hit and hit for power, there is room for him on a major league roster if he develops into the power that a 6'4" guy should.
For sure. All right, so I'm excited about this next little snippet here. So batting around, Friday, April 19th, mark your calendars. It will be Hall of Fame night at the Lake Elsinore Diamond. The Lake Elsinore Storm are officially inducting two Storm legends into the brand new Storm Hall of Fame, Wade LeBlanc and Andres Pagan. So Wade LeBlanc, he goes back for, you know, Padres fans. Andres Pagan is a name that's not too familiar to the casual baseball fan, but you and I, we have gotten to know him a little bit better. So LeBlanc accrued a 2.64 ERA with the Lake Elsinore Storm in 2007. This was his second season in minor league baseball and his final full season before his major league call-up. He played four seasons for our big league affiliate, San Diego Padres, and went on to play elsewhere. I know he went to Seattle and a bunch of other places, had a long major league career.
And to talk about LeBlanc, like, and literally, I think he retired last year, the year before. Like, he was pitching in AAA and making spot starts up until maybe 2 years ago. Like, and after he left us, you're like, oh, thank God he's gone. But he actually came back and pitched really well against this one game, the Padres, that is. We lit him up, I think, one more time. But like, you're like, wow, that guy showed up out of nowhere. And he made a solid over 10-year major league career.
He did. But so Andres Pagan played parts of three seasons in Lake Elsinore before staying in the area and working for the team for nearly a decade. Yeah. He is still an employee of the team, working as an assistant to the CFO. This induction is not just a thank you for those years of service, for his high character and the value he's supplied the Lake Elsinore Storm for nearly half of its existence.
Yeah.
So he's assistant to the CFO. He also he helps run their food and beverage department. And for us, he's been a part-time interpreter.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be our interpreter this year again this year. And we have some names on that list that I want to talk to. And certainly having him there is so valuable. I so many times in early having the podcast, I really can only talk to them, talk to guys that are the American guys. Having him there, being able to talk to some of the Latin players is it makes me feel good because I want to hear everyone's story. We want to give you guys everyone's story. And with him there, it's really easy to do. And he's really a sweet guy. Like, you see him out there, you ever go to Lake Elsinore, you'll see him out there. He'll be out there in the concourse, just standing around. Don't be afraid to go up and say, hey, congratulations. I'm certainly going to give him some ribbing when I see him up there, maybe next week, but congratulations to them. And it's kind of cool that the Lake Elsinore Storm have a Hall of Fame now.
I want to know what that's about. Is that a physical place or is it in title only? I want to know more about this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it is, if there's going to have a room or what they're going to do with that. But I'm sure it'll be somewhere.
Yeah, a little good thing to promote. So if you happen to be walking around the concourse and you see a large, well-built Latin American-looking guy.
Good-looking guy, too. He's good-looking.
Very well-dressed, wearing a long shirt, probably kind of satiny-looking fabric and some very nice loafers. That's probably Andres Pagan. Go over and say hi, and he'll give you the nicest handshake and stop and talk to you as long as you want. So last year we had that interview with Rosamund Verdugo, and it was an interesting little moment because you asked Rosamund, like, who are some players that inspired you growing up? And he pulled a name out that you and I never heard the name before, but it hit Andres because he was his roommate back when he was at Lake Elsinore 15 years prior. I mean, what a small world. So it was neat to see Andres get touched by that.
Absolutely. So let's move on to Fort Wayne and Pain in the Corners. So Saturday, Miguel Cienfuegos was a late scratch, and Sam Whiting made his high A debut. He threw 2 2/3 innings with 5 strikeouts. Now, this time of year, a lot of these low A and high A guys aren't going to go 5 or 6 innings. They're going to go 2 or 3 innings. They're going to build up. But he did really well. I posted some video of him, and we didn't hear anything about Cienfuegos or why he had the spot when he was a late scratch, but I did see he pitched later in that series. So it wasn't injury. Maybe just for some reason they wanted to put Whiting in there, but he did a really good job as well.
I love the name Cienfuegos, like 100 flames, 100 fires, like the man of 100 flames. Like that's a good name for a pitcher. But he's got an interesting story. We should try to talk to him sometime.
Okay.
So he wound up going the indie ball route out of college, and he wound up playing in the Australian Baseball League, and he got signed out of that. So really? That's how he made his way back to affiliated ball. I would love to hear about his stories. He was playing in the Frontier League, and then wound up playing for Adelaide.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm here in the living room, and I got to feed the cat, man. I'm sorry.
If you guys can I'll pick it up from here. All right. On Sunday, the Tin Caps carried a no-hit bid into the bottom of the ninth inning.
It's a great game.
Oh, man. You know, and somebody pointed it out to me. They're like, hey, you better check out what's going on in the Tin Caps game. I'm not going to tell you what, but you better go take a look. And it was like the bottom of the eighth when I started following the game. So, of course, it's because people started chattering about it. But anyway, with one out in the frame, first baseman Kyle Nevin. Oh, man. Kind of a cousin of a former, Phil Nevin's son.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. He singled up the middle. Nevertheless, Dylan Lesko went the first 4 innings with 1 strikeout. Geraldo fanned 2 in the fifth. Then Cienfuegos struck out 5 over 2 perfect frames, earning the win. Pena pitched the eighth, and Ryan Auk recorded the save with 3 strikeouts. Oh, one hit away in what was that? The second game of the season, I think it was.
Yeah. And they were just nails. You know, it's one of those things where you don't, I watched that game and I'm like, God, they haven't got a hit yet. And I checked the box score. I'm like, holy shit, there's not a hit. And then I just started tweeting stuff out. And we were getting ready to leave. I couldn't stay for the whole thing. And I was like, but I got some real fun stuff.
You said something about them not having surrendering a hit yet.
Yeah.
Did you even say something about they have a no hitter through so many innings? Maybe you put the curse on them.
If it's minor league, I guess it is. Yeah. But if it is, it is. It's
hey, the superstition still lives. Yeah. But I love hearing the conversation bantered around by like AJ Cassavell and Jesse Agler and these guys. Like, do we talk about it? Do we bring it up? And some of the media guys are just upfront about it, like, hey, no hit through 5 innings.
Right.
Like they want to just get it out there.
All right. So on the screws,
take it.
All right. On the screws Friday, Ethan Salas reached base twice with a single and a walk. He also stole a base. Like, catcher, this young kid's stealing bags too. And he had a double on Tuesday. He's hitting .294, .368, and .353 to start the season. Not a half bad start for a kid that, you know, a little bit struggled in double A, is in high A, feeling comfortable, getting good at the plate. Threw out a runner the other day as well. Nice to see Salas off to a little bit of a hot start.
The stolen base is an interesting one. I saw the replay, and he's not a burner, but it must be just a matter of reading the situation and understanding how to be aggressive. And absolutely, go feel it.
Absolutely, the baseball acumen, they call it.
Yeah.
So Sunday, Griffin Dorsing put on a show for his dad's birthday, who was in attendance with his family. He had 2 doubles, 1 RBI, and off the wall and left. Once again, this kid hits a baseball and just murders it. I mean, talk about Nathan Martorella with him just punishing baseballs. When this kid hits the ball and squares it up, it goes far and it goes hard. He bounced that thing off the wall. Looked for third, but, you know, they pulled him back.
I want to tell him that you referred to him as a kid. That is a grown ass man right there. I don't know how old he is, but I mean,
I think I said big donkey on Twitter is what I did.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. All right. So batting around, the Tin Caps are celebrating 15 years at Parkview Field, coming off their winningest season since 2017. They're putting on a lot of promotions out there. Yeah. So if you happen to be out in the Fort Wayne area, by all means, pay Parkview Field a visit, and they're going to be so good to you. So during the offseason, as part of a $1.2 million project to comply with MLB specifications, Parkview Field's playing surface was replaced. Additionally, the front steps of the ballpark were improved. Okay, so Sunday, like father, like son, Kyle Nevin's father, Phil, who played 12 years in the big leagues, including with the Padres, once broke up a no-hit effort by Randy Johnson in the ninth inning of an MLB game in 97. Ironically, in 98, Phil Nevin broke up a Sterling Hitchcock no-hitter with a homer in the eighth inning. So maybe that's just something that runs in that Nevin blood, is breaking up no-hitters. At least they didn't do it with a bunt to start that controversy right. All over again.
And ironically enough, I was at that game. My brother had played hooky. And we went to that game, and Hitchcock had like 78 pitches in the eighth inning, and they were playing the Angels. And Nevin came up, pinch hit the home run. And ironically, we sat like my brother's boss was like three rows down, and we had to we got out of there. But yeah, it was, it's in their blood. And another thing about this, the affiliate rundown this year, this week, it's a little bit slow. I just wanted to cover the first couple of days of the week. Was really busy this week with life, and I didn't really get the chance to really, really look into everything. Didn't double check my reads. That last sentence in the first from, cut off, because I just kind of cut and pasted that there. So you got the ballpark were improved, and that was it. So,
hey, we roll with it. I don't think anybody would have noticed if you didn't bring attention to it. So it's all good. We're here. We're having fun. We're talking about Padres minor league baseball. So let's keep a good thing rolling.
You're so positive, Roy.
I try to be.
All right. So painting the corner, San Antonio. Dude, opening night, Adam Mazur looked mid-season form. He was absolutely pounding the zone.
Adam-azing-ering.
That's good. We might have to put that on a shirt. Anyways, pounding the strikes, we had 44 strikes and 56 pitches, hitting 97-98. Now, I'd reached out to people and find out if the gun in Amarillo is hot, because I don't think he was throwing 97-98 last year.
I think everything up in West Texas is hot. I think that right. gun's a little hot.
But I mean, he was dealing. Plenty of swing and misses on the secondary step as well. He had allowed one run in five innings of work. The right-hander allowed two hits with one walk while striking out eight batters. And like I said, he's just dealing. And tonight, the top of the ninth, he pitched six solid innings, a little bit of traffic on the bases, but plenty of strikeouts. I posted a couple of videos on Twitter, before we came on. So Adam Mazur really is coming out of the chute this season with a man, like pitching like a man on a mission. And it's really good to see. Last year, Robbie Snelling got so much of the press, and everyone was so impressed because he was so young. And quietly, Adam Mazur put together a solid, solid season last year. And looks like he's hot. He's hot, hot, hot.
Wow. I don't want to skip ahead to next week, but right now, the Naturals and the Missions, or the Naturals. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Northwest Naturals.
Northwest Naturals, it's the top of the ninth. It's scoreless right now, and the Naturals only have three hits on Missions pitching. Adam Mazur went six innings, three hits, four strikeouts, no walks. And then Carter Lowen has an inning pitched. Robertson has an inning pitched, three strikeouts, no walks. Lowen's given up only one walk the whole game. That's great.
I got the game on right now, and Go is pitching right now for the Chonklas, for the Flying Chonklas. So it's
that's right. They're the Chonklas today. Wusuk Go. Yeah. Close it out. Wusuk. Let's go.
All right. So Saturday, Robbie Snelling got the start, and the Bulldog had to come out early. After retiring the first two batters, he gave up a single and a walk. A wild pitch moved both runners into scoring position. And the 20-year-old just stranded him after striking out the next batter. Like the Bulldog.
I love that.
Yeah,
man. You run into a little bit of adversity, and what do? A lot of guys buckle, and he just buckles down. Love it. Okay, absolutely. So on the screws, on Friday, Nathan Martorella had three singles and drove in a run. Cole Cummings had a pair of doubles and drew a walk as part of a three-hit night. Brandon Valenzuela also chipped in with three hits, including a pair of doubles. On Saturday, the offense hit four home runs and collected 10 hits. Ray Patrick Ditter left the yard twice. Ray Patrick Ditter is on a tear to start the season. Yeah. Zach Rex hit the first Missions home run. Nathan Martorella hit a three-run shot, first grand slam of the season.
For Reeks. That was for Reeks.
Okay.
But once again, all the action is in Double A, and it's going to be so fun to cover this team. And it'll be interesting to see as the season goes along, you know, when those guys move up and or if they get called up, you know, due to injuries. Well, it's not, you know, it's a long season, but if they just stay in Double A and get called up from Double A, I wouldn't be surprised if some of that pitching does. Maybe some of the starters could be called up from Double A. I think maybe more of the bullpen pieces might come out of El Paso, but it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season kind of rolls out.
You know, I'm keeping my eyes open for Carter Lowen. I really want to see him make it. You know, we interviewed him way back before he had Tommy John surgery. Yeah. I don't know if I told you, so I had a chance to say hello to him and I shook his hand and he has bear paws for hands. Like, you know, nice solid handshake, but his hand just like wallowed up my hand. It just kind of struck me. But, you know, the long blonde hair, the power righty out of Hawaii. Love it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, batting around. After retiring in August of 2022, Reggie Lawson is attempting to make a comeback. The 26-year-old was activated in October last year. He was the first player interviewed back in spring training in 2019 at the complex. And God, I was so nervous. Like, he was the first guy to talk to. And like, I'm like, Reggie Lawson? He's like, yeah. Hey, how are you? He didn't look
Did
so good.
Did you feel like Chris Farley talking to Paul McCartney?
So,
hey, you remember that time you struck that guy out? That was right. Cool.
You're a pitcher, right? And before he retired and was, you know, struggling with the injuries, we were talking about it. He was on the cusp of actually making the major league roster or getting a call up.
They brought him out here for Fan Fest that one time.
Absolutely.
Like, and I mean, they don't do that for nobodies. They only do that for guys that they think are right there on the cusp. But his shoulder injury happened to show up and never quite got right after that. So I guess he needed a little extended time off to be able to fully rehab and be ready to come back.
You know, absolutely. And he's still 26 and there's still lots like there. And there's, once again, there's depth. If he gets it back and it starts rolling, I, you know, certainly could see another in the future using him as another depth piece. He didn't do so well the first outing. I think the second outing did a little bit better. He is coming out of the bullpen. He's no longer a starter. We'll see how it goes as the season moves along. But great to see Reggie Lawson back. Got a great smile, and we're going to see how it goes as the season goes on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring that up. Like, he's just one of these guys that you want to see him do well. He's got the charisma and the smile. Everybody loves the guy. So really hoping the best for him.
Absolutely. So moving on, opening night was the most runs scored in the opening night since 4-9-93 in Midland. They scored 12 runs. And those first two games with the Missions, I think they scored 12 runs that game. I think they scored 18 the next. Like, this just a shit ton of game. Pardon my language. Damn it, I'm going to put one of those markers on there. They just scored a double-digit runs in, like, the first two games. Absolutely amazing. And then also, they had the most hits on opening night since 2004. Jacob Marcy had three stolen bases Saturday, which ties a Texas League record. So those first two games were just amazing for the Missions.
And talking about Wade LeBlanc brought you back to the mid-2000s, huh? Jason Marquis, I haven't heard that name in a while.
God, all right. He was well beyond washed up when he came up to the when we signed him to a minor league deal. Oof.
Oh, that was the Padre way back then. Oh, yeah. Washed up pitcher. You still got a couple miles left in the tank. Come on, let's see what you got. All right, so let's move out to El Paso. So painting the corners. On Thursday, a couple of arms that should contribute to the major league team had solid showings. Sean Reynolds threw a pair of scoreless innings, 6'8" fireballer. Allowing just one hit, and Adrian Morahone tossed a scoreless frame and struck out one. The 25-year-old sat 97-98 with his fastball and broke out his knuckle change several times. Now, you talk about a hot gun in Amarillo, but we know that Morahone can go out there and just pump 98.
Yeah.
Reynolds came over from the Marlins in the trade deadline as part of the package in exchange for Ryan Weathers. On Friday, Kevin Copps looked sharp. He recorded four outs, allowed one hit, and struck out two without allowing the walk. The former Arkansas reliever and Golden Spikes Award winner walked five in his first two innings. So all three of those guys, so Morejon and Reynolds are already on the 40-man roster.
Yeah.
So they're just one step away from getting the call up whenever the next opportunity shows up. Kevin Copps is off the 40-man, but I mean, since the day that he was drafted, people were looking at him like, if the slider works, you can slot him right into a big league bullpen. So I'd love to see him, you know, make that next level.
Yeah, he just needs to keep consistent, really.
Right. And then Tuesday starter, Nolan Watson, he's somebody we haven't talked about a whole lot, but he's been in the organization and just continues to kick butt. He pitched 5 2/3 shutout innings and picked up his third win in as many starts this season. Watson has struck out 17 batters and walked only two this year. His 5 2/3 innings matched a season high for the Chihuahua starting pitchers. Jeremiah Estrada, another reliever to keep an eye on, struck out the side in the ninth inning to get the save. I have a feeling we might see Estrada sooner rather than later. He made the trip out to Korea with the guys as a taxi squad member. I think he's probably going to be the next man up if they decide to send somebody down.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they did send down like a Brito. Trying to find his role and where he is. Has been a struggle. I mean, he's been really inconsistent, and they're putting him in leveraged situations where he needs to perform, and he's only done it once out of the three times that I've seen him pitch.
It's an early season. I mean, Yuki Matsui had one rough outing, and then he's come out. And I think I was listening to Ben and Woods, and I didn't realize this. He's gotten his last like 12 outs, his last eight outs on 12 pitches. He'll go out there and just that sinker that he's got, guys are swinging right over the top of it, flipping it, easy ground balls. Tom Cosgrove got lit up his first game of the season, and he was probably their most reliable reliever last year. One bad outing doesn't make a season, and it just takes guys a couple of games to get their legs under them.
Definitely with a short season, and then short spring training and then going out to Korea, not kind of getting your full workout where guys, as much as pitchers are ahead of hitters in spring training, they need that full time to kind of get their feet underneath them, get all that stuff working. And if they're not doing it consistently, pitching every day, like they would be in spring training, you can be set back a couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, we saw Blake Snell, it took him a half a season to kind of find his bearings. And that's after the trade, you come up with one organization, and Brito could be dealing with some of that. I mean, it's a whole emotional thing. You're used to the same coaches, the same players, the same locker rooms and all that stuff. And now everything's different. You got to find a new support system, new friends, new habits, new routines.
No, always look on the bright side of life. The positive, Roy.
I'm trying. I'll be up there hanging from the cross. Always the bright side of life.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing. We left, for those of you here, I left. We left in the fifth inning of that game that they came back. Monday game. Four runs. Like we almost left after four runs. We're just like, I'm going to watch. I want to get some Merrill at bats. I want to see Campy hit. I just want to get some, time, at the ballpark. And, it was 8-0 in the fifth inning. Okay. I think Campy dribbled or struck out. We're like, okay, we're out of here. And we left. And, we usually leave. I get up pretty darn early in the morning. So we usually leave in the seventh, eighth inning if they're losing by a close run or whatever. But we left. And as we're going, I put my phone up on the car and, two-run shot. Oh, great. Two-run shot. Great. Oh, two-run triple. By the time we got home, it wasn't 8-7 yet, but we had just gotten to the door and Bogarts hit the two-run shot. And even then we're like, do we want to watch the game? Yeah, well, let's at least watch those runs. And by that time, Taddy hit the two-run shot, and it was just like, wow.
Oh, man. Do you do MLB TV?
Yes.
Have you watched the condensed games the next day?
No, not yet.
So the morning after, I don't know what your morning routine is, if you sit down with a bowl of cereal or what, but pull up last night's condensed game. They take the game and they put it together into like a 5-minute snippet, and you hear all of the different announcer teams, home and away, radio, TV. They show all the pitching changes, all the significant defensive outs, all the Everything, every significant moment of the game is all squeezed into like a 5-minute thing. It's so cool, especially on a night after that or a morning after a game like that, where you just kind of want to relive the good vibes.
Oh, dude, no, we ended up going back, watching all those runs. And then, like, I'm like, it's like 10 o'clock. I got to go to bed, honey. I got to get up at 4:30. And so she's listening to the post game show where I'm trying to go to sleep. But hey, let's finish it up here on the screws with El Paso. Get you guys out of here. Hope you guys like the new setup. It's going to get better as we go along. I'll put it together a little bit better. It'll flow a little bit more easier. But let's finish it up with Clay Dugan. Dude, shortstop Clay Dugan hit 2 3-run home runs this last week. So there are a couple, you know, there's Watson, who I have no idea who was in the system last year, was kind of one of those quiet guys that won a lot of games and did well. Clay Dugan, I think, is another offseason minor league signing. I don't think he was with us last year.
No, he's been with the Royals organization. And don't fool yourself. This is not who Clay Dugan is. He gets on base a lot, but he's never hit more than 9 home runs in a season. And he already has, I mean, he has 2 in one game. So he's
welcome to the Pacific Coast League.
Plays all over the field, gets on base a good amount. To me, he's kind of smells like another Tyler Wade type of player.
All right.
Yeah. So don't get too excited with the El Paso helium.
I won't. But it's a little late. But choo choo, all aboard the Sully Express, baby. Brett Sullivan had 2 5-hit games in the first week, including a walk up double on Friday. The 30-year-old has 5 hits. Two 5-hit games this season. He came into the year with just 1 5-hit game in his professional career. Sullivan was off to a 17-for-31. That's a .548 average with 2 doubles, 2 triples. But there's a lot, call it the Pacific Coast League, but there's some big ballparks in the Pacific Coast League. So, you know, you hit it out there and he just keeps running. He runs well. He's not fast. And a homer. He is tied with teammate Clay Dugan for third in the PCL with 11 RBIs before he got called up.
So I just pulled up the El Paso team batting stats. Brett Sullivan, he has 38 plate appearances. He's only struck out twice this year in El Paso. So he makes a lot of contact. And I feel like that profile fits well at the bottom of the Padres batting order. So you got the thumpers that are going to put the ball, you know, they're going to drive runs in. Yeah. They've had no problem getting guys at the front of the lineup on base. Bogarts and Tatis have been doing a good job of it. It's getting the guys in. And so when they've gone on these scoring runs, I was at yesterday's 10 run game, and it wasn't all 10 runs in one inning. It was 2 runs here, 2 runs there, 3 runs, but it was because they would pass the baton. A guy gets on base, a guy hits a solid liner through the infield, and it gets past a glove. You know, it's things like that. They're not going for the big hit. And so somebody that can keep that train moving by getting the bat on the ball, forcing the defense to make a play. You've got aggressive base runners on the team. I think Sullivan can find a really good role with this team.
Absolutely. So moving on to Friday, Matthew Batten had a pair of hits and scored 2 runs. The versatile infielder hit safely in his first 4 games before going hitless in his last 2. He is off to a .290, .353. .387 start through 7 games. Saturday, Tim LeCastro, watch out, your depth is showing. Reached base 4 times for El Paso, going 2-for-2 with a double and 2 hit-by-pitches. Hey, you get on, it's on-base percentage. LeCastro has been hit by a pitch 4 times in 13 plate appearances this season.
I'll update that. He's been hit by a pitch 7 times in 24 plate appearances. I don't know how he does it. He's got a magnet on his elbow guard, I guess. But you know, he's got speed. He can play center field. He gets on base. What does he do? He gets on base. Who cares how you get on base? Yeah. So if that's his way to the majors, good for him.
You know, and he has done well in the past. He's one of those come up guys, kind of fill a role, you know, take, you know, just a role playing position. He's not going to light up the TV screen or whatever, but one of those solid guys that you come up and can fill in a role as the season goes along and, you know, fill in for someone playing that's injured.
Right. Right now, Jose Azokar kind of has that role.
Yeah.
So if something were to happen to him, I could see LeCastro sliding into that spot, being the bench glove, you know, get an occasional at bat, you know, get a spot start every once in a while, maybe dispel Jackson Merrill. Cause I mean, Merrill's been playing every day. At some point, those legs are going to get tired.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about Merrill. Man, the talk about the Merrill madness. He has exceeded all expectations. I mean, how many times did we say, like, you know, he really needs at bats in Triple A? He really needs, you know, we probably should be in Double A. The kid has just come up and been like a fish, you know, in water. And
yeah,
it's been amazing to see. And he's must watch. He's almost must watch TV with Tatty.
Right. Well, so Tatis has the power potential. He might hit the scoreboard with his next swing.
Right.
Merrill can put it out, but he doesn't have that kind of power, but he has the patience at the plate. And I love when he gets to two strikes and just starts fouling the ball off, foul, looking for his pitch to hit. And he puts together some of the most professional at-bats of everybody on the team. And he's a 20-year-old rookie.
Yeah. And I think as he gets older and it builds more strength, like that power will come. That ball he hit in San Francisco would have gone out anywhere else. But on a cold night in San Francisco, that ball is getting caught, you know, and right. He already had the opposite field homer. So I think that power will come as he gets older and just gets more comfortable and you know, maybe starts attacking the ball. Let's hope he doesn't sell out for that. I like his approach. I like him not having to, you know, swing for the fences and try to pull everything. Just get used to hitting the pitching. And then you can start tinkering a little bit. But, you know, I think Tony Gwynn Jr. said it today on the 97.3 Fan. They had a roundtable after Ben and Woods.
I was listening to that. Yes, you know, I heard
that. I caught a little bit of that. And it really made sense. Just like most of those guys come up and they start hitting. Well, then they start, well, let me see if I can pull one. Let me start pulling it. And it really screws with you. I think his head is screwed on right where he will just he'll hit the pitch where it is. And that's the big thing with him. He's hitting the pitch where it's pitched. And not trying to pull that stuff. So great first couple weeks with Jackson. And I'm so stoked for him and his family. It's really fun to see.
It is. All right. Well, let's take it home here. One last little note on here. Batting around. Last Wednesday, three of the first eight El Paso batters were hit by pitches. That sounds like grounds for a paddling right there. But the Chihuahuas and the Round Rock Express have now played 100 games all time, and both teams have won 50 of the games. I saw Tim Haggerty. Thank you. He tweeted that out. That's an interesting little tidbit right there. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, that's it. It's short. It's sweet. It's the first run of the books of the season. They're going to get better. We're going to have more fun. I'm going to have more cool batting around stuff. More interviews coming in the future. The season's off and running. We're here.
All right. Well, until next week, you can catch me. I'm at @Zippy_TMX. Come give us some feedback. Let us know what you like, what you don't like.
Absolutely. And you can find me on Twitter @SD Donovan.
Go Padres.